Good afternoon, and welcome to the Iowa City Foreign Relations Council's program featuring Yoshika Graham. Thank you for joining us in person and via live stream today. My name is Brett Cloyd, and I am an IACFRC board member. I'll be your host for today's program. This year, we're celebrating the Iowa City Foreign Relations Council's 40th anniversary. We have some great plans for this year, with a total of four events devoted to celebrating our supporters, our legacy in the community, and the bright future ahead for internationally focused programming. We hope you'll check out our website, sign up for our monthly newsletters, and follow us on social media to learn more about the exciting stuff happening this year. Today's program is part of the new 2023-2024 series, Global Connections Across Iowa, which is funded in part by Humanities Iowa and the National Endowment for the Humanities. We hope you will join us in the upcoming three programs in the series. More information can be found on our website. For today's program, we would ask two things, if you are willing. First, there are paper copies of the Humanities Iowa sign-in form. It would be great if you could add your name and contact information to one of those. Second, after the program, and again, only if you're willing, there are paper copies of the Humanities Iowa program survey. It would be great if you would fill one out and leave it with us. ICFRC wants to acknowledge and thank its annual donors, sponsors, and partners for their support. The list includes the Iowa Arts Council through the Iowa Department of Cultural Affairs, Humanities Iowa and the National Endowment for the Humanities, the University of Iowa's International Programs Honors Program and the Public Policy Center, the Stanley UI Foundation Support Organization, Midwest One Bank, Taxes Plus, City Channel 4 for providing online access to ICFRC's programs, along with the UI Library's archives, the Iowa City Public Library for our new home, and last but certainly not least, the longstanding support from individuals who have helped our organization grow for 40 years, many of whom are in the audience today. Thank you. ICFRC has adopted the Native American Land Acknowledgement prepared for the City of Iowa City's Ad Hoc Truth and Reconciliation Commission and Human Rights Commission. ICFRC recognizes that our home community of Iowa City now occupies the homelands of Native American nations to whom we owe our commitment and our dedication. The full text of ICFRC's acknowledgement is on our website at icfrc.org. I would now like to introduce our speaker. Yoshika Graham won the 2019 Mervyn Morris Prize for Poetry from the University of West Indies, Mona, where she read the bachelor's degree in literatures and English and twice won the poetry class competition. An executive member of the Poetry Society of Jamaica, she has been awarded a Centrum Writer's Residency and has been featured on stages including the Dodge Poetry Festival in the USA, Bristol Festival of Literature in the UK, the World Festival of Poetry in Venezuela, and the Port Townsend Writers Conference, also in the USA, where she has also delivered craft talks and taught cross-genre workshops. Her poetry, prose, and literary criticism have been published internationally, including in Spillway Magazine, Magma, Cordite Review, Pre-Lit, Bookmarked, Jamaica Journal, The Caribbean Journal and Social Work, and others. Short films for her poems, Directions from the Caribbean Journal of Social Work, Short films for her poems, Directions from the Border and Time Travel, for which she won a gold medal and the Noteworthy Writer Award from the Jamaican Creative Writing Competition, premiered in 2016 and 2017. Her debut collection, Some of Us Can Go Back Home, is forthcoming from Blouse and Skirt Books. Please join me in welcoming Yoshika Graham, who will talk about Jamaica, holding a vibe in a textured landscape.
Thank you so much. Thank you very much, Brett. Thank you, everyone. Good afternoon. Thank you for being here. And I must say big thanks to Humanities Iowa, the Iowa City Public Library, the IWP program, Some of my colleagues and friends are here, so thank you so much for your support. And also thanks to my former professor, Donna Hope, who sort of invited me to start thinking about Jamaican music as worthy of literary investigation, right? And also to Professor Opal Palmer Adisa, in whose journal, Interviewing the Caribbean, a version of this essay was first published. So we're gonna get into a bit of the music, and I see we have a very intimate gathering of persons here. So we're gonna explore a bit of the music and see what the artists are doing and how they are chronicling the life of Jamaica and Jamaicans through their music. All right, so let me get a little more volume on this for you. All right, so Jamaica, holding a vibe in a textured landscape. Now say Jamaica in almost any room, anywhere in the world, and the ears perk up, the eyes widen, as if suddenly the beach is in view, and as if the listener has been transported to a land where jerk chicken and coconut water are standard fare, and the island's signature sounds can be heard on any given corner, any minute now. Now, when I was asked in a gallery in Caracas, Venezuela, some years ago, where I am from, and I said Jamaica, I was promptly serenaded by a security guard with Bob Marley's iconic song, One Love. In that moment, there was a kind of communion around the music, around the moving message of unity, of one love, one heart, regardless of where we called home. Even here in Iowa, reggae is belted out among my fellow writers, finding their way through the island's rhythms. And such is the blessing of a little place that has impacted the globe on a scale that far surpasses its landmass and its just short of 3 million people population. Now, if you ask me how Jamaica has done this, how it has become a global brand and made the impact it has made in spite of its many challenges, those it has faced and continues to face today, I couldn't say that I have a singular answer for you. I do know that every day Jamaicans at every level are striving to make a life out of very little. And so you might say that the Jamaican saying that we're little but we talawa, or we are small but significant, or better yet, we have challenges but we are resilient, is indeed true. So today I do want to talk a bit about some of the music that I think seeks to tell the story of this island, Jamaica, and its many layers, some unpopular, some unseen, some unsightly, and how even these kinds of narratives, the land and its people, somehow still manage to bossa dance and keep the vibe going. All right, so if you Google Jamaica, which I happened to do a few days ago, not because I don't know the place, but, you know, just so you didn't have to, you might find something like this. So images of our flag, the white sand, the beach, and the list goes on. Lots of landscape and beauty. It is a gorgeous place. And so these are some of the broad insights you might see when looking from outside. Of course, you might see a bit more if you dig a bit deeper, and also if you know what you are looking for. Even more so if you've lived in this place. Now, you might encounter the island's crime statistics, its trailblazing athletes, its poverty, its internationally renowned writers, its economic hardships, its music, its vibrant people. And so, right away, we can recognize that here we find a land of dualities. And to take a closer look at that, we must often come in from the beach, pull up a chair, and hear what the artists are saying. We begin with the music of an artist called Protégé. Now, Protégé in 2017 released the song Blood Money, and through this song, shines a light on how criminal activity is made to endure when supported by those in power. The result, Protégé proposes, is that the criminal elements and those who accept their donations for silence seldom face meaningful punishment, thus resulting in a dangerous cycle of crime for the populace.
Watch no face, beg no more pardon. Enough drugs, money, they are cherry garden. Enough individual society applauding. You can ask anybody where them get them starting. But no politician take a donation. So no criminal will never see a station. Never see a cell.
All right. And you will find with the music as we go along that you want to dance, you know, regardless of what is being said, you do want to dance. And so that is kind of the undercurrent that's happening here, where the subject matter varies, there is hardship, there is difficulty in it, but somehow the artists, somehow the people, they manage to still do the work of lifting the spirit while this is happening. Now, in Protégé's song, he writes into Jamaica's heavily classed society, and with the lyric, out of many, but a one set of people feeling it, effectively disturbs the nationalistic oneness that seems embedded in the country's motto, which is a beautiful motto, out of many, one people. Now, grounded in its independence, Jamaica's motto may be read as its attempt to solidify and promote itself as whole, to move forward and make meaning from what it had been given, a beautiful, bountiful island, a multiracial population, and a vast history of enslavement, forced labor and brutality, and resources heavily skewed in favor of descendants of former colonizers. The country needed now to define itself and move away from race divisions, asserting that we were effectively Jamaican above everything else, right? Now, here is where the artist presents a challenge. This oneness assumes both a balanced history and a present that sees equal distribution of resources, wealth, and privileges across the population. But by neglecting the fact that wealth distribution remains heavily skewed, the motto assumes that all are equal. This, the artist highlights, is not the case. Now, this kind of challenge to the system is not new to the culture. Indeed, Jamaican popular music has long been a space for negotiating with and challenging the society. In dancehall, just one of approximately 8 genres of music created in the country, emerging from the inner city, this form, dancehall, has facilitated the voicing of lesser-known perspectives, according to Professor Donna Hope in 2019, enabling some to make a living, and I begin to quote her here, make a living from music and culture when other avenues were closed off or simply non-existent. Though much has changed as middle-class voices have entered Jamaica's popular music, attention to the plights of the masses remains a significant feature. In the Jamaican situation, popular music often alerts the wider society to the hardships of the poor, challenging oppressors and valorizing and validating inner city life, often promoting betterment. Now, Jamaican music royalty, the late Bonnie Wailer of the iconic Wailers Band, is quoted by Kwame Dawes as saying that the name Wailers emerged out of the realization that their music, that of Bonnie Wailer, of Bob Marley, of Peter Tosh, was effectively wailing in the face of suffering. Now, this work has been carried forward with artists highlighting the hardships of the oppressed or the ghetto, the gully, garrison, a key theme of dancehall music as theorized by Donna Hope as part of the 6 G's of dancehall. All this wailing and still managing to keep the energy high. Now we turn now to Morgan Heritage. Their song, Nothing to Smile About, In this song, a common belief in Jamaica as paradise is dispelled by surveying the land and responding to a visitor's inquiry into the serious facial expressions of the people they see.
No people come to Jamaica, no know how we live things. Say everything nice to we full of vibes and ting. Them same one feel it to them heart when them get few of us stand the real thing. Yeah, me day a town one day, I part with a white man we come all the way from Norway. And him turn to me and say, how comes Jamaica full of so much screw face? Same time I lift me head to the sky, and a teardrop fall from me high. Me say, man, you'd come with God for a drive. Let me show you why me cry. Look on the gully side. Do you see anything to smile about? Look at that hungry child, yeah. Do
you? All right, so there are two people in this scenario. There is the person living in the island, there is the person visiting, and there is an introduction of sorts to what is being seen. Eventually, the visitor or surveyor, startled by the expressions of the people he sees, asks, why the country full of so much screw face? To which he gets the question, do you see anything to smile about or anything to smile about? Look on the gully side, look at the hungry child. The group's repetition of the word look suggests the necessity of pointing to the plights outlined as if these may not be readily seen or understood by outsiders. This validates the artist's position as seer and teller, recognizing and making hardships known. Duane Stevenson does similar work in Ghetto Pain, highlighting the experience of those living in depressed or inner city areas. So they don't know what it's like, what it's really like to face real ghetto pain, to face real ghetto pressure. Here, Stevenson vents with much emotion to reveal some of the unknowns of inner city life. He repeats really, pressure and pain to amplify the agony of the experience, even as the music itself seems to soothe. And we could say that this wailing that Bonnie Wailer describes in the music is central, often running parallel to the advocacy for the ghetto, however, is a condemnation of those thought to be responsible for the suffering of the people. In Anthony B's Mr. Heartless, released in 2002, he condemns those who take advantage of the poor youths with limited options, often resulting in their demise.
You, Mr. Heartless, you're worthless. Master, my soul, I'm a conscious. Think it's a laughing matter, this. You are trying everything, you have your job set up. And your plan is for one brother to hate the other brother and slay him so Babylon can crush his skull. It's a pity many of our youths don't realize that you trade them with your dollars, give them your killing orders, and turn around and sell them out just like French fries. But here is what you do, you use the youth like them a tool for doing a bag of evil things.
So Anthony B here is addressing both the person he believes is committing these atrocities, and later on, he also addresses the young people, the youths in depressed areas who may be the victims, right? So to them, Anthony B. offers, that's to the oppressors, Yenita Gobita, positioning the addressee as both an authority by the use of Mr. and demonizing them with the word heartless. So the song is called Mr. Heartless. Central to Anthony B's argument is that yago piefa, or you will pay for the ill that you have done. Later, it is to the youth that Anthony B makes his address with, now follow them and lose your soul. And further, like others, they will shake you up too, urging the youth to remain assertive and not fall for the efforts of the criminal or political elements who want their bidding done for them, regardless of the cost to the desperate youth. On another hand, for the artist Sizzla, it is the entire system or oppressive regime that has primed him and others like him to suffer. In I Was Born, he says that the system neither cares for him nor his offspring. Here, Sizzla's assertion that his struggle is with a system rather than an individual suggests that the oppressed are held in place not only by singular heartless men or individuals, as Anthony B proposes, but also that the island's masses have been set up to fail based on the limitations ingrained in the country's history, planning, and ideology. But in a 2019 Star Par interview, another Jamaican artist, Lisa Hyper of Gaza Empire fame, said she believed artists should never forget where they come from. Asked to clarify, she said, you have to come from somewhere. You have to have a past to live the future. It is this argument around origins that also finds its way into much of Jamaican popular music. And while some might question the validity of praising challenging beginnings, artists like Hyper pay homage to their hard lives as places to rise from. It becomes the story they will tell to crown their development from nothing to something, as the saying goes. Now, in this work, we find artists at once cementing solidarity with others of similar origins, praising and validating these humble spaces, and looking to better possibilities. In Buju Banton's Untold Story, the title brings listeners into an intimacy, here revealing the many things not known about getting through every day.
While I'm living, thanks I'll be giving the most high. I'm a living while I'm living to the Father I will pray. Only Him know how we get through every day. All the the price I'm a leg we have to pay. While our leaders play, all I see people are rip and a rob, all are grime. Thief never love is a thief with long bag. No love for the people who are suffering bad. Another toll to the poor, may God help his soul. What is to stop the youth from getting out of control? Full of my education, yet no own a payroll. The clothes from me back of countless eyes old. Could go on and on, the fool has never been told.
So, the clothes from me back have countless eye hole. Clothes is full of holes. Yeah, so Buju Banton sings this and later says that all has not been said and that even his telling in this song would not be enough to fully disclose his plight. I could go on and on, the fool has never been told. At the same time, telling of the youth who attempt betterment through education but cannot find work, full up of education yet not own a payroll. Right? And we are often told that education is the path to improvement and to betterment and to success. And so we find that in some cases, that is not realized. In another respect, we find Everton Blender, Ghetto People's Song, privileging and validating the poor. Let's hear what he has to say.
Ghetto People's Song, only them can sing this world.
It's a ghetto people song, only them can sing this world. It's a song for the poor who's facing separation. It's a ghetto people song, only them can sing this world.
All right, so Everton Bender sings that, yes, it's a ghetto people song. Only them can sing this one. Only they have these trying experiences, but also this song is something I am gifting to them, they who have so very little. Later he says, give a little, even a little, just let it trickle, urging those who have vast holdings to share with those in sufferation and tribulation. Now this idea of shared experience coupled with exposing the living conditions of the little-known poor is also brought forefront in Chronix's They Don't Know, which, like Buju Banton's Untold Stories, strives on the premise that it exposes something.
Chronix.
There we go. All right, so for Chronix, they see me smile, but they don't know what I feel inside, he sings, offering the idea that suffering can look like prosperity and sadness like joy. Chronix also confirms an assertion that Professor Donna Hope makes, that while many inner city youth may try to use music to elevate themselves, they are seldom able to escape the scourge of intergenerational lack or the dangers of living where they live. The result is that, though one might perform and be viewed publicly as doing well, challenges to survival persist. And amid all this wailing, there is the idea that we shall overcome. And we hear this from Movado in 2008, grounding his vision of betterment in God and a striving to improve one's situation.
Overcome, you know?
Yes, yes.
Yeah, man.
Brighter day.
All right, so Movado sings of money over gun, or encouraging working hard to gain wealth over engaging in violence to do so. Elsewhere, for another artist, QQ, at the time just a preteen, it is this idea of betterment that he brings forward in the song Better Must Come. QQ sings of the impending betterment, right? Some tell the youths them say don't bust no gun, but better must come. He doesn't say where this betterment might come from, and how could he know? The material things he mentions are life's challenges, including the lack of food, the lack of adequate living space. Here, possibility is grounded in God and other intangible holdings. And the artists signal that these are the things that they and those they advocate for possess, their bodies, and whatever dreams they can conjure and work towards. But Jamaica, no problem. is something we might hear running simultaneously with the island's motto of out of many one people. And yet, poet Richard Dingo Dingwall writes that there is problem inherent in no problem. Like Protégé, questioning Jamaica's unofficial tagline and the idea of ease often equated with the island. The tourist-friendly image of miles of white sand and an ever-smiling Jamaican is often disturbed by the movement of the artist to the mic. For though not all artists call themselves defenders of the poor, the conditions and cares of those living in poverty seem to always reach the stage. Artists challenge the projection of a single image of Jamaica, revealing nuances and unsightly realities that would not fit the proverbial or actual tourist brochure. They call for an acknowledgement of the hardships experienced by the masses, laying charges at the feet of those who claim power. And like Gordon Rollier, as quoted in Buckner 2019, says of Caribbean writers, that there exists a relationship between pain and form, between traumatic experience and the primal impulse to shape, so too, I offer that the artist does the work of carving out of difficult offerings of the space they often occupy. But theirs is not only the work of wailing, for we also see in the island's popular music a recognition that more is possible, even when the specificity of this more is unknown. Artists acknowledge and encourage those living at the base of society and sing with hope, even as they sympathize and form community around shared troubles. At the heart of their work, these artists recognize the personhood of the island's poorest. They keep the music going. They keep the dance going, even as they celebrate what it means to come from and rise out of hardships. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Yashika. That was wonderful. I'd like to suggest we add music to all of our programs in the future. We're going to now move to our question and answer portion of the program. For those with a question, please raise your hand and I'll bring a microphone to you. But before we begin, ICFRC wants to thank its supporters and donors for their support. If you'd like to join ICFRC or make a gift to support our programs, please go to icfrc.org or check out one of the signs stationed in the room today. Okay, let me see if I can get this going. I do have the microphone on. Is it on? Do you hear it?
Not quite.
There we go. Great. Let's get some questions for Yashika.
Thank you very much. It was a great presentation. I know a lot more about Jamaican music now than I did before. I'm curious about, I don't know about Jamaican politics, but I was wondering if all these protest songs that are going on, is there any pushback from the Jamaican authorities or Jamaican government officials? Or
to these songs in particular?
No, just in general. I was just wondering.
I do not know that there's a general pushback. There is a way that this kind of music alerts the public and brings it to the attention of the public. And we are a music-rich space. So, you know, the leaders are hearing this music. And so in a way, they are getting the messages that, you know, there is dissatisfaction, there is the need for change. But I do not know that there is necessarily an explicit pushback from them. Thank you for your question.
Thanks.
Other questions?
Thank you so much for this wonderful presentation. I did notice with most of the artists that they were mostly male identified or male coding artists. So kind of the gendered aspects I saw, you know, so is there kind of current female reggae artists who are kind of pushing back in the same way?
Doing this work? Oh, absolutely. So at the time when I did this, Oh, wow. These were the contemporary sounds that I found useful in having this conversation. But absolutely, there are women. There are women artists. Queen Ifrika comes to mind. Itana comes to mind. More contemporary sounds from Lila Ike comes to mind. You know, so there are a vast plethora of women artists. And this work is not... this isn't the absolute of this work. So to write about Jamaican music is to continue writing, certainly, and to continue having the conversation. And I believe the artists are making it necessary to continue having both a conversation about their music and conversations around the issues that are happening in society. I appreciate that question. I anticipated it. Yes, coffee, yes. And thank you for coming decked out in your Jamaican outfit, the flag and everything.
It's not a really well-formed question, but I'll ask you to muse on what kind of is in my head. One, in the backdrop of this year being such a celebration of the 50th anniversary of hip-hop, mm-hmm. and assigning it being a thematic narrative, and listening to the music that you've chosen, I think, by the way, I actually met Manly here in Iowa when I was on the NEH board in the 80s. So it's interesting. But I think, I guess what I want to ask you is, how much is the Jamaican diasporic and relationship back to the UK sort of, I don't want to say laced, but entwined with kind of the politics of what's going on? Because for some people, it's so still post-colonial. Mm-hmm. But it's also emerging, but has emerged in an autonomy. So do you play with any of that? Hmm. I'd also love to hear some of your poetry, but that's another
thing. Let me see if I understand what you're saying. So your question is more around the conversations that are happening. Are artists talking about liberation? Are they talking about more contemporary issues? Are they beyond the idea of liberation? Do you mean that?
It's so many of the states were part of the Commonwealth have had a very up and down experience. I mean, I think of when almost I can't think of his name, Henry's brother, William, and his wife, you know, when they were going to Barbados and other things, there's sort of this attempt, it seems, on the part of the UK to rewrite or reinvent, you know, well, we're really all friends, you know. We had they had Irish troubles, but we also had troubles with our surrogacy. I'm carefully not calling, because it's almost like people are deliberately using different language, trying to change the reality of what it was. Mm. And since, particularly I think for the African diasporic people who are in Jamaica. I mean, I went to Howard. I have friends and colleagues who were staunchly, well, I'm really a British citizen. I said, honey, please. You know? Because at the time, I said, yes, technically, you do from your passport, but you're from Jamaica.
Right.
And the cultural richness in that really goes back to Africa. So instead of just having sort of like two places, mm-hmm. I'm just wondering how much, and do you kind of get at what I'm going
yeah,
at? So, has three prongs, you know?
Right. So I think that at least three prongs do exist, and that there are persons who are more focused on different areas. So if you talk to, say, someone from the Rastafari community, they may very well say that their vision, their mission of themselves and the Black diaspora is to return to the continent. right? And that is something that is always a part of that conversation. And there are persons who are passionately, staunchly, very Jamaican. This is where I belong. This is me, you know? And then there are persons, I want to say, that are of some, not all, an earlier generation that would have been around when, or aware and conscious of the happenings politically when the British were in rule, and that somehow still find some favor in that experience, and that they still think that that is something that they would favor. So I do feel that as a post-colonial space, that there will always and is always that sort of dislocation and that a kind of dismembering that happens just because of the fact of our history, and that persons may relate to it differently and they may feel dislocated, not grounded. And I have that personal experience too of like, yes, I'm Jamaican. Someone asked me if I'm where I'm from. I say Jamaican, but I have this thing in my heart that questioning of where am I from? And that is a dislocative quality that I cannot correct. I can repatriate, I can go back, I can search, but there is a jaggedness to that experience that we face in the diaspora, the African diaspora, where there it's been cut, right? And so you're always trying to correct and to recoup and to heal, right? And I do think that that's an ongoing kind of experience, a jagged one. Thank you for your question.
Great. More questions from the audience.
You mentioned Rastafari, and I know that...
Well, this will make sure our streamers...
Oh, okay. Sorry, you mentioned Rastafari, and I know a little bit about their history of... political resistance and their influence on like earlier reggae. Mm-hmm. And I'm curious about how that influence has evolved in contemporary music and mm-hmm. whether or not those ideas
it's sort still
of
there.
Still, yeah. Like what influence that has.
Mm-hmm. I think that that's a running quality of the music, where reggae music is seen as the music of resistance, of upliftment, of exposing issues that happen in the space. And I think over time, it has stretched forward. There are those who say that it hasn't, who say that it has dulled, the fire has dulled. And I think perhaps some of the political unrest, some of the confrontations are not as prominent now because a lot of that work has been done in prior generations. There are still issues that remain today, and I do find that the reggae contemporary artists are still doing that work. We talk about Chronics, we talk about the Coffee and the Lila Ike and the Proteges, a lot of those voices, and still many emerging that are continuing to do that work and who see the importance of being that voice of exposing what's happening in the space. So yes, it is still very, very present. Thank you for asking. Yeah.
Any additional questions?
Yeah. You made an excellent point that I, as somebody who teaches at the University of Iowa in international studies, that I think a lot about in terms of young people and their images of Jamaica, of the islands, of what one does when goes there, and what happens when they don't go there as tourists. I'm wondering if you have suggestions about where to turn young people onto what life is really like in Jamaica, rather than this image that they have, or this very narrow experience that they might have had, or their parents or their friends might have had, when they go to, say, an all-inclusive resort mm-hmm. on the island. Mm-hmm. How do we redirect with things that are tangible for young people that can be found on the internet, music included, mm-hmm. that gives them a better understanding for what Jamaica is really like.
Mm-hmm. Tourism is a curious thing. In my own experience as a visitor to places, I do recognize that I do not tap into the issues of the place. And in a way, one might say that as a tourist, you want that. You want to be free and liberated. So, but when you are the space where tourists are occupying, it feels a little different, right? So I don't have a single answer for you. I do think that there perhaps could be individual searches. So for example, when people go to like all-inclusive resorts, sometimes those resorts have curated the experience. And so they say, okay, on Monday we'll go to this craft village and we'll go to this site and we have this experience, we have this narrative, right? And so perhaps it is in the hands of the visitor themselves to do their individual investigation and to see what they can find. So I cannot necessarily give you a point institution or a point person to say, hey, this is the real Jamaica, right? Because that has its own issues, the sense of what is real or what is authentic. One might investigate with the Institute of Jamaica, for example. That's one institution that keeps and documents the history of the island and the history that goes a bit farther back. One might explore the National Gallery, but yes, these are still institutions that have curated their offerings, right? And so I think it needs to be a personal search, a personal investigation, and a seeking out, and perhaps looking beyond what you actually see, you know? Yeah.
Yeah, thank you for the presentation. As someone who really consumes a lot of music from Jamaica and all that, I was gonna say, you have carefully selected the guys who are speaking to truths, who are speaking to consciousness, to changing, you know, things, the evil or the bad things within society and all that. But there's a lot of a shift towards guys like Intense, Govana, Sean Seer, and all those guys. Mm-hmm. How much of those guys overshadow some of these things that we are seeing mm-hmm. here today? Because the young people would rather gravitate towards, you know, that dance hall,
right.
Raga feel. And is there like a drive to see how the things that those guys are pushing do not just, you know, permeate everywhere and just become the thing that the young people are following all through? Mm-hmm. Because back home in Nigeria, that is what the whole culture has become. It's about the, you know, for the young people, it's about the violence that's been portrayed in Afrobeats rather mm-hmm. than what the fight would have been for Afrobeats, which was by Ofela and all the rest. I don't know if you get where I'm coming from.
Yeah.
So,
yeah, yes. I do, and that is a challenge that we have. I would not say that the entire dancehall space is like that. There are persons who focus on violent lyrics, and some have said that they're portraying what is happening in the space. But I do believe that one ought to be very aware of what you are communicating and oftentimes what you are promoting. So there is a drive in terms of the Broadcasting Commission saying particular like things that push violence or push drug use are not approved for playing on air, on public air. I do want to speak to an aspect of dancehall though that is about the good vibe. That is about cultivating. It's about dance music. And we talk about people like Ding Dong, some of Shensia's music as well. You have a lot of artists who are about feel good. And that, I think what I love about Jamaican music and the various genres is that you can dance in these different ways, right? And so you have the reggae music, in which you can, what we call skanking, and you just, you know, you kind of holding a vibe, and but a dancehall song can invite you to do any number of things. So we make dances from food. Ding Dong has a song called Stir Fry. there is Signal the Plane, Elephant Man, and so it's like this, right? And so there is a way that the music that we make is cultivating from, like, nothing in a way, or seeing the value in the small things, or seeing the value in anything and creating an energy, creating a vibe out of that, creating a vibe out of that. And we see that a lot in dancehall. So I don't want to say that dancehall is just the violent lyrics that we hear. And I do think that that is an issue that is present there. But there is a rich part of dancehall that is about lifting the spirit, and it's about having a good time. And I think that is part of Jamaica's signature, the having a good time, sending a good message, and we see that more richly in reggae music, sending a positive message and uplifting the population. Thank you.
Additional questions? I've got one. So I'm wondering, when you realize that you're coming to the United States, are there some American artists that really inspire you, that you were excited to either see or be close to where they lived? And also, I wonder if you've seen any good live music since you've been in Iowa City.
Oh, wow. I could answer both of those layers with one answer. I had the absolute privilege of seeing Herbie Hancock on stage at the beginning of September. Mm-hmm. I did not, until a certain point in my planning, I did not know I would have seen him. And I don't have a lot of experience with his music, just a little bit, right? Mm-hmm. But I know he's a big deal.
And
yes. And so there was a big Grinnell crew inside of the Hancher Auditorium, and so it was just an absolute honor to watch him, to hear him, and to hear the experimentation, to see him run across the stage twice at 82. It was just a privilege to see him. Of course, there are a lot of American artists. We get fed American music quite a bit. Who have I been listening to? I have an uplifting Beyonce Break My Soul in a loop. There's like an hour loop of Break My Soul that sometimes I just need to, you know, lift my spirit, and I just play that 1 hour loop of it. And I have been listening to Snow Allegra, which is, there are a number of songs, but I Want You Around is the one I've had in loop as well. So there are many artists.
Yeah, Taylor Swift.
You know.
Sorry,
I feel like you're drawing, you know, the Swifties are gonna come for me. I think certainly some of her music has, you know, because it's so popular and the energy is there, has found its way to me as well.
Okay.
Yeah. Great. But thank you for your question. Thank you, everyone.
Wrap up.